Blog Talk Radio.
E potau la lande fili fionse, e potau la sulla baribonse, e potau la ponta no kutukana, wushina umui pushapo. Palo de iwe finshu chitile, ukwesho kulungi kapoli, e potau la chuku sonta iminwe, na umweva po, ushe na umweva po Yesu, ushe na ulanda po na we, ushe na uishiva ifyale faya ushe, ushe, ushe na umweva po Yesu, ushe na ulanda po na we. Ushe na uishi wa ifyale kwa ya pamwe owe. Ushe. Epo taula lande fili fionse. Epo taula tula balibonse. Epo taula ponta no kutukana. Ushe na uishi wa
good morning from Dallas, Texas, and welcome to Zamda Block Talk Radio. We are excited today that we are going away from Lusaka up into the northern part of Zambia, and we are going to be discussing tourism, museums, and things of that nature. We are very excited about our guest this morning. Before I introduce our guest, I just want to welcome everybody back, and what a great discussion that we've had today. Roger, thank you for doing extra time. It takes a lot to do that. Dr. Patrick, welcome back.
Excuse me, good to be back. I have food in my mouth. I'm sorry.
I know. Roger, are you on? Okay, he's probably trying to connect Mr. Mwansa, who's going to be joining us. Well, like we've been announcing, and we have been promoting over the weeks, that we shall be talking about promoting museum in the northern part of Zambia. Joining us today is Mrs. Victoria Chitungu. She serves as the director at the Motomoto Museum. She's going to tell us the details of where it is located. I don't want to give out too much information. Mrs. Chitungu, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. As my name is Nathan Nkama, I'll be hosting the discussion. We are waiting for Mr. Mwansa to join us as well. But to begin our discussion, Mrs. Chitungu, let me just ask you this question, because when we talk tourism in Zambia, the first thing that comes to the mind of a lot of people is Livingstone, Victoria Falls, and all those things. Where is Motomoto Museum, and how did the name come about?
Yes, Motomoto Museum is in Mbala, which is the northern part of Mbala.
Yes.
I'm in the northern part of Zambia. Katama is the provincial capital, but Mbala is one of the districts in northern Zambia, and it's just at the border with Tanzania. So that's where Motomoto Museum is.
Is in Mbala, Mrs. Chitungu, is it in Muchinga or Northern Province?
It's in Northern Province, not Muchinga.
Okay.
Province.
Okay, please go ahead.
It's in Northern Province, yes. And it's near the famous Kalambo Falls. It's about 24 kilometers to Kalambo Falls, and the museum is located 3 kilometers from Mbala town.
Okay.
And
excellent.
The name of the museum?
Yes.
Hello, again?
Yes, go ahead. How did the name Motomoto come up?
Yes, the name Motomoto came about. It was a nickname for a priest, a Roman Catholic priest. In fact, he was a bishop, Dupont, who developed Chibula Mission in 1897. And Dupont was famous for smoking. He loved to smoke. He used to smoke a pipe. And each time he wanted to smoke, he would call for moto. And you know, moto in Swahili and many African languages means fire.
Mm.
So he would call for moto. So the local people nicknamed him Motomoto, meaning the priest that always asked for fire. So the museum was named after him because it was started by a Catholic priest, Father Cobell, and I think he's the one who initiated the name in memory of Bishop Dupont.
Excellent. Mrs. Chitungo, before we continue, let me welcome Mr. Mwansa, who is also joining us. I believe he's going to tell us where he is, whether he's also in Imbala. To those listening, Dr. Patrick, Mr. Mwansa, to us on Zambia Block Talk Radio, he is known as Uncle GM. He's one of our senior contributors and advisors. Uncle GM, welcome.
Thank you very much, Nathan. How are you?
Doing good. It's been a while.
Yes, it has been out here in Imbala. But it's good trying to, tune in and get used to what goes on here.
Excellent, excellent. We shall be getting your perspective as well on what is going on in Imbala on your side as we continue with our discussion with Mrs. Chitungo. Mrs. Chitungo, let's continue our discussion. Do we know what prompted the Bishop John to begin this project?
Yes, that was a perfect speech, Father Cobell. Yeah, John Jacques Cobell started this museum. The collection of Motomoto Museum dates back to the 1950s when this priest, Cobell, started collecting. He was just fascinated by the African culture, and he started collecting artifacts around the Bemba lands.
Yes.
That's where he had come to work. He came to Zambia in 1946 as a missionary under the White Fathers. So he was interested in African culture, especially items of music, medicine, initiation rites, and witchcraft. So it was out of his interest, his personal interest, that he started collecting. But also, because the church, also that is the Catholic Church, you know, they wanted their music to go African.
Yes.
Because the local people still seem to enjoy the music in the church. And one of the reasons they discovered why they lost membership is because of the way they conducted the services, especially in singing. So Cobell was one of those people that went around trying to identify musical instruments and the type of music that Africans were most interested in, and brought it back into the church and making it, Africanizing the music in the Catholic Church. And even up to now, if you listen to the Catholic Church music in Zambia, and you listen to the Bemba music, if you go to Kusetia Pangwena, you find that the music is just almost the same because of Father Cobell's influence. So that's how he started. It was just a personal interest. But then the collection started growing. And wherever he moved, to Essenza, wherever he moved with this collection. So in 1972, when this collection was so big, the Diocese of Imbala decided to donate a piece of land, which was previously a carpentry workshop for the Catholics. It serves as a museum. And this is where the museum is up to today.
Okay. How far, what were the areas, what are the regions where they did
the search or the work where they were collecting these artifacts. Can you tell us how far wide they went in the Bemba region or whatever areas they went to?
For Bell, you know, doing missionary work, he covered almost all parts of northern Zambia, including the Bemba land and also Mambwe and Namanga land. So he was in Usoga, he was in Mulansolo, he went as far as Serenge, and also in Kinsali and Mbala. You know, these are the places that he stayed for a period of time.
Yes.
But he moved around in all areas of northern province. And he even reached as far as, you know, the Congo borders. He would go towards Wakula and the border between Zaire and his Congo now and Zambia. So he was moving about. But the places where he stayed longer was at Mulansolo, at Serenge, and at Isoka. At Mulansolo, he stayed from the 1950s to about 1964. Then at Serenge, he stayed for about 5 years, 1964 to 1969. Then in Isoka, from 1969 to 1972. Then from there, he moved to Mbai. And there, the collection stayed. But himself, he was moving up and down, bringing these artifacts from Mbai.
What sort of method was he using to collect? Were they doing actual digging, like in archaeological work, or how were they collecting these artifacts?
Him, it was purely ethnographic. It was not so much archaeological, it was ethnographic. And it was the way he related to the people. He collected mostly from the people that attended his church, from the people that he visited in the villages. And some, we had some relationships. Like for initiation ceremonies for the Mbuta, he had a lot of collection of the Mbuta. He had a particular relationship with the Bemba princess.
Mm-hmm.
Who had defected and went to join another church. Then she came back to the Catholic church. So to get her back, he said that he wanted her to tell him about the initiation ceremony and the Mbusa, the Mbusa that was used in the initiation ceremony.
Yes.
So as a price to pay back to come back to the church. So that's how he got this some of these artifacts from the initiation ceremony. Otherwise, some things were just given to him. Some he bought, or some he asked for. Then he also had relationships with the chief. He had a very good relationship with the chief Mamba.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, it was understood that he even took over to become under the rank on who succeeded Chief Mamba. He became the chief Mamba briefly. But that only shows how strongly related he was to the chief. And there are some of the artifacts that he got from Chief Mamba himself, which were symbols of authority in the Bemba chiefdom. And the symbols of authority in the Bemba chiefdom then, I'm not sure, but now, they symbolized women. They were the symbol of women. They were called mother, grandmother, and daughter. So these symbols, which were access to ceremonial. Then there were also some drums, which were called as the daughters of the chief. These, without these, a chief would not become a chief. So they are the ones which had the authority of the power of the chief. So Dupont, when he wanted to get these as a collection, he asked them from Chief Mamba to collect them, but the chief refused. Because these ones are my actual daughters. They are seen as my daughters. So if you want to get them, the only way you can get them is to marry them. You have to pay dowry and go through the whole process of marriage, which he did, and at the end he was given these drums, and they are in the museum, they are part of the collection.
Excellent. You're listening to Zanda Block Talk Radio.
He was a married father.
He was?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, he got married to the drums, and these were the daughters of Chief Mwamba. So even when he succeeded the chiefship, I think he was looked upon as one of them. He was their son-in-law, you know.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Eh? Roger, I'm enjoying this. You're listening to Zambia Dog Talk Radio. We're talking to Mrs. Victoria Chitungu. She's the director at Motomoto Museum in Imbala, northern province of Zambia. But Victoria, if I walk into the museum right now, how is it set up? The sections, the divisions, the categories, how is the arrangement in the museum?
Yes, the museum is largely an ethnographic museum, but we have aspects of archaeology. So the first part that you come to is archaeology. And archaeology in the Motomoto Museum is very important because this collection is connected to Kalambo Falls, which shows, you know, at least the earliest, one of the earliest occupations of man in tropical Africa. So the excavations that were done at Kalambo Falls in the 1950s by Desmond Clark and by other archaeologists that followed him, they are deposited at Livingstone Museum, but we have some that are at Motomoto Museum, and these are the ones that the visitor first meet, because we are talking of the presence of man in Zambia, but with a focus on Imbala and the Mulungu region. And with that, we are looking at artifacts from Kalambo Falls.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first thing that you meet. And these artifacts date from about 100,000 years ago. And they show a sequence from early Stone Age man up to early Iron Age man. And the most fascinating thing about the archaeological findings is the earliest evidence of man used fire in tropical Africa. It comes from Kalambo Falls. That's the first earliest evidence, comes from Kalambo Falls. And we have this on display at the museum. Then from there, we also show the rock art. Mostly we are showing the examples from northern province, such as those from Limbo Hills in Kasama, Mula Caves, and Salient Caves in Serengeti. But the interesting part of this rock art display is the implements that were used in the making or in the process of making the rock art. So there is the stone mortar and pestle that is believed to have been used by the late Stone Age people to grind their different colors and mix them and then paint. So we have these on display. Then from there, we are also showing early Iron Age implements such as pottery and the copper bars that were used as a form of exchange, that is like currency and money. And also we have economic activities of the Iron Age people and also the Bantu people, that is us now. And the most interesting one in this aspect is the Chibwa salt making industry, which was is very common around the Mbika area. And this just tries to show the economic activities of the Iron Age people. And Zambia being in the central part of Africa, salt was a very rare commodity. And being able to make salt, it meant that people's economies were improving because they could exchange salt with many other commodities, you know, in the middle of rest of Africa. Then from there we have the history section, and the history section talks about the Bantu migrations. We're just looking at how people moved into Zambia, and then we're also looking at the creation of chieftainships, and we are also again concentrating on chieftainship in the northern part of Zambia and their symbols of authority. Then from there, we are looking at foreign influences or outside influence after the Bantu migration. We are looking at the slave trade, and we have marked the slave trade routes in the northern province. So the routes that were used, especially between Lake Tanganyika and Lake Malawi. And the interesting thing is that Motor Museum actually is where it is located. It is a trade route. It's only a trade route of the slave trade. So we have this depicted in the museum. Then we have also the missionaries, and then there, after that, we're talking of the colonialists, people who came and colonized the country and the type of economies they brought and different things that people went through. And we are displaying, you know, tax, native tax receipts, original ones. The famous Chitupa is on display, and in Palata, which was also sort of tax to pay for bicycles and dogs. So all those are on display. Then we come to the Station of Independence, and then we are just showing the different forms and ways in which independence struggle was fought and who was involved, and we are talking of the Kenneth Kaunda of those days and the Harry Munger Gombolas of those days. Then we move to the Benshina Uprising, and we have on this day artifacts that we have collected from the Benshina followers, and just to understand, you know, what kind of religion they were practicing, and also what kind of people they were, and we are also showing pictures of the Lumpa Church that Benshina built, which was a very big church, and the people don't realize how big it was. So we are showing also that period. Then we also show the UDI period, that is the Ian Smith, Zambia, Ian Smith, you know, Rhodesia, Southern Rhodesia, that confrontation. And the main thing on exhibit here is the deep bridge from the Chandeshi Bridge, which was bombed by the UDI soldiers.
Okay.
Then from there, we have the First Republic, the Second Republic, and, yeah, that's the history section. But
okay.
In the ethnography, we have got a whole lot, yeah.
Yeah. Before I go to Mr. Mwansa to give us a visitor's impression, one thing you mentioned to me, Mrs. Chitungu, in our discussion is, talk to us about these Second World War weapons which were abandoned.
I don't know how it missed me. No, it's there. In fact, that's one thing. I don't know how Kama jumped it. That's another thing about Mbala. You know, Mbala was one of the places where the British and the Germans confronted each other during the First and the Second World War. And in the Second World War, there's one place where they even fought a war. It's called Malido Village.
Mm-hmm.
And when the First World War ended, the Germans surrendered actually in Mbala, but the official surrendering was in Sama. And on their way back, as defeated soldiers, they threw their equipment. They didn't want to surrender their equipment to the British soldiers, so they surrendered their equipment and guns. They threw them into the Kichila. And some of these guns have been retrieved, and they are on display in our history gallery. Then, also, we tried to tell the stories of the war from the local people's point of view. So,
yes.
The Second World War, especially, we did locate some people that went to the war and fought on the British side. And surprisingly, most of these audience had with them things that they brought from the war. So we have them on display. There's a frying pan, and an iron for ironing uniforms, you know, those irons which we could put direct on the fire. And also the water bottles, the bottles we are using for drinking water or carrying water in the field. So we have these on display in our museum, and we also have pictures of some of the local people that participated in this war. So that's one interesting part of this.
Yeah, that is very interesting. I would like to see those things. I mean, learn than go to Livingstone and see the Victoria Falls. Those of you that are joining us, we are talking to Mrs. Chitungu. She's the director at the Motomoto Museum in Mbala, Northern Province. We are not in Lusaka today, So that is good news for my friend Roger. Let me go to Mr. Mwansa. Uncle GM, from a visitor's perspective, I'm going to consider you as a visitor to Motomoto. What is the significance? What is the experience like? I mean, why should the person go to Motomoto Museum?
Well, first of all, as Mrs. Tundu has said, it has a rich history, not only of the area, but I think of Zambia as well. If I can give a perspective of my children, every time we visited here, a visit to Motomoto was one of the highlights.
Yes.
It brought alive to them what they were learning in social studies. So it has now been telling them they are grown up now, but when they come next visit, they will find a lot of improvement. It's now more better laid out in terms of prehistoric, as Mrs. Chitundu has said, that also captures a lot of the history of pre-independence and post-independence Zambia.
Yes.
So those are some of the highlights. So, you know, some of the things that one tends to forget will come alive and say, oh, yes, you know, there was this. And also, the other aspect, I think they're trying to bring in and capture some of, you know, the life. For instance, one of the latest galleries, which I found this time, is celebrating the work of the women in the churches. There is a gallery specifically for that, showing really the impact that their social services work has and continues to have on the Zambian populace. There are certain specific things that, like in Pulungu, for instance, you know, sometimes people forget that it's the only port in the country that we have.
Yes.
Number four, you know, the second best port in Africa. So there are quite a number of these features that in the Motomoto Museum brings to the fore. And it's sort of stuck in, and when somebody is talking about Imbala, it's like a far-flung place, you know, some remote place, and yet it has such rich history captured in Motomoto. So a visit to Imbala without visiting Motomoto is not complete.
Mr. Mwansa, I want you to speak to the aspect of people understanding that it's better to get the history from our point of view than it has been told to us by those that came and just settled in Zambia. I don't know what your experience and your impressions are about the Lumpa Church. I want you to speak to that.
The Lumpa Church, as it happened actually, my father was transferred from, my father was a policeman. He was transferred from Kitwe to Mbala in 1962. And 62-63, that was the Lumpa Rising. And we used to see them come, you know, boy, we were fascinated by them. But the following, more or less, I think people in North America might remember the Waco David Koresh issue in terms of that. So it's similar in terms of the following. She had this following and claimed that she met with God. I mean, in her church, they used to have the Holy of Holies, just like the Old Testament, where the chief priest would be the only one once a year who would go in this Holy of Holies where they would commune with God and come out. And it was exactly that with Elenchina.
Wow.
So, now when the uprisings came that was one of the first issues that KK faced, you know, immediately after independence. He had to deal with that because they rebelled. They did not recognize the rule of the government of the day. They wanted their own war. So there was that clash. And the followers of Benshina were told that No, there's just an agency said believed they could get up to the trees and fly up, and so well, a number of them broke their bones, they would drink urine, and all sorts of crazy things like that. But, you know, like, just like David Koresh in terms of the Waco, people believed. And it's like you're so brainwashed, you can think of yourself. So that history is there. And I saw the Lenshina people as they were banded in, brought to the prison in Imbala. It's a bit of a dark history for the country, but it's a reality. It happened.
Yeah, that's what museums are for. So those of us that are listening, please, when we go back home, let's not just end up in the popular known historical tourist areas or historical areas. Let's go up north to Imbala. Mrs. Chitungu, coming back to you, let's talk about the bishop or the fathers that did this work. What was their fascination with the mbusas, the dress, and the food? These are some of the things that you mentioned to me in our discussion. These things are there in the museum, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Understanding Father Kobel, I think reading what he wrote about, you know, the people and their traditions of Northern Zambia, you know, he was so fascinated by the music, first of all. The music, he said, was so beautiful. And the musical instruments which he collected, which we are not seeing, you know, people using now, different kinds of drums, and the trumpets made of animal horns.
Oh.
And he was so fascinated by this thing and, you know, how people managed to produce music using these instruments. But coming to the Mbusa, the initiation ceremony, he wrote himself saying that the culture in the initiation ceremony was so rich. The knowledge in the initiation ceremony was so deep and very rich. And when he wrote in 1982, his fear was that Zambians were discarding this kind of culture, and he was afraid that they would lose knowledge which they would never regain. And he decided to write a book on Mbusa. And for us, his collection reflects, you know, what he saw, and we also appreciate the knowledge that is embedded in this Mbusa objects. But interestingly, is that Kobel used this same Mbusa to preach in the church, because he found messages that were just the same as in the Bible. And he thought that why teach people from, you know, an angle that is so far away from them? Why not use what they already have and teach them the same lessons that are in the Bible? So his church actually was, he used the Mbusa drawings on the walls, depicting different kinds of lessons, and he would use them to teach the Word of God. And the interesting thing about Kobel and Lenshina is that, you know, the Catholic Church were losing members, and they were losing members going to most of them were joining the Lenshina, the Lenshina Church. And the Lenshina herself was also a Catholic church. Then she had this church. Yes. So, even when Kobel himself doesn't put it in his writing, but when you look at the two, you can see Kobel fighting on the other side, trying to get the musical instrument, take the music in the church, because Lenshina's music was very African and it was attracting a lot of people. Even the princess that he used to get the knowledge of Mbusa had defected to the Lenshina group and then came back to the public. So there was a struggle between the church, not only the government, but also the church and Lenshina and the culture, the Africanization of the culture. And even up to now, you know, when you look at the history of the church, once I mentioned what we have put an Egyptian on the history of the church and the women's groups, what, how they are working in different churches, we are seeing more and more of how these Christian churches are being Africanized, bringing in African aspects of our tradition in the church and then blending them and then coming up with this something which is Christian but whose principles and values are similar. So that's exactly what Cobell was doing. And the museum is just trying to see how far this thing has gone. Cobell brought the Mbusha in the church, but different kind of churches, you can see how they are being Africanized again and how the music is coming back into the Christian church, the African music coming back into the Christian church. Just on that point, the museum...
Yes, go ahead.
The whole concert, for the church concert that is during Easter period. And the emphasis or what we want to display is the Africanness of the Christian music in Zambia and in Bala in particular.
Okay. The Africanness of Christian music. I like that. For those that are listening online, if you want to see more details just about Zambian tourism or Zambian museums, you can go to, I found this website, Museums Zambia, one word, museumszambia.org. And then you can click on the Our Museums icon, and it will bring up all the museums in Zambia. You can look at what Motomoto has to offer. Some interesting stuff there. For those that have called in, if you wish to ask Mr. Mwansa or Mrs. Chitungu a question, you can press 1 on your phone keypad so that I know that you have a question. Roger, you can come in anytime you want to hear Titus and everybody that has called in. Just let me know if you
need
to ask.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Questions.
Thank you. Hey, thank you, Mara Chombo, for coming through. First, Nathan, I want to find out one thing here. We had the council secretary for Mpolokoso. He said Kalambo Force is in Mpolokoso. Now, Mbala is also saying Kalambo Force is in Mbala. Where is Kalambo Force?
Kalambo Force is in
Mbala.
It's very much in Mbala.
Okay. Okay, I think that's clear. I was probably going to do the profile for Northern Province, and I was going to say Kalambo for season, but that is a good. Visitors to the museum, Warachirombo, how many visitors do we have per year?
Per year, local tourists, that is local people, we have... we grew up to about 3,000 just then, in a month. We can go about 3,000 local tourists. So per year we can estimate to come. Yeah. So in a month we do go about 3,000. We can have 3,000 people. But for foreigners we have very little. If we have 8, we have a lot.
Okay. I asked that question probably going forward.
And then
how we can
for locals.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, for locals again. When I talk of locals, mostly the bulk comes from schools. That is from Mbala schools. So when we don't count these ones, if we say from Lusaka, from Lea, if we talk of 200 people from outside Mbala and the nine schools, it means a lot. So we have very few again in that area. So the big numbers, the local schools.
Yeah, there is room for... How is the museum financed? How are the finances? How do you finance the running of the museum?
The museum is financed by the government. It receives a grant for it's supposed to receive grants from the government for operations as well as for salaries. But for a long time now, we've just been receiving for salaries and not for operations. So the the financial situation of the museum is not so good.
Is there? So probably the room for partnerships to promote what is being, because some of the things, Wangstung, you talked about, maybe foreigners may not have heard about, you know, how the Germans surrendered and those tools are there. A lot of people would be probably interested to come and have a look at that. Finally, my final question. You heard Nathan mention how to find the website for the museum. We had to go so many routes, and I've been looking around. I haven't found one. Even our Facebook page is just a headline. I haven't started. Any plans on that one? And probably maybe we can find people who could be willing to help.
For the website, we are looking for people who can be willing to help us. We would really want to have a website. We have a Facebook, but we would have loved to have a website.
Okay. No, thank you so much. That is to be our homework, my friends and Brother Josiah here and everyone. We have some people who could be of help. Thank you, Wangstung. Thank you so much.
Very important issues that you have raised, Roger. Yeah, and this is the whole purpose of us having this conversation, Mrs. Chitungu, courtesy and compliments of Mr. Mwansa here, and I think working together with Chasaya. Chasaya, what Mrs. Chitungu has said, I think we need to do something here. You can't have... is it 6-8 foreigners come through in a year? Canavesa.
Yeah, that's... I think, first of all, I'd like to thank Mr. Mwansa for facilitating this particular engagement, and Mrs. Chitungu for giving us time to hear. First of all, I'm Chasaya Sichilima, again, just for those who don't know. And my parents came from Mbala, so I have a particular interest in Mbala, just from the sense of that it's really my home city, my home village. And then to address your question, Nathan, I think, yes, a lot needs to be done to make Motomoto Museum and Mbala in general, and rural areas in general, in terms of development, to be known to the world. And if you talk about tourism, Mbala in particular, you're talking of Kalambo Falls, Motomoto Museum, there's a beautiful lake, Lake Chila. We certainly need to do a lot, those of us who are outside Zambia, to make other people aware of our country. I think for me, one encouraging thing is that at least in terms of local tourism, people get to see it. But obviously the numbers need to be increased. And then on the international tourists as well, we definitely have a lot of work cut out for us.
Yeah, absolutely, my friend. Very important points that have been made there. As we go along and try to consolidate this, Titus, your thoughts, this is very important here for us to address this matter. Okay, Titus. Okay. Let's go to area code 813, the last four digits, 3390. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Alan.
Yes.
Very interesting program, but I wanted to find out from our colleagues in Zambia, because I think that the Lenshina uprising, that is a very... It was a major part of the history of the people of Zambia, especially in the in that particular area. But why is it that that subject of Lenshina is almost taboo? You know, it's been marginalized. Nobody actually ever really talks about it. And when, for instance, when you asked Nathan about the Lumpa Church, I felt that the answer that was given is a typical answer that I get, even for me, who is a direct descendant of Lenshina people. It's a taboo. We don't talk about it in the family. You never get any details. But for me, from the pieces I've been able to pick up over time, it would make for a great plot of a movie or just an historic aspect, because a lot of people died and the power that woman commanded over people. that is something that I think would be very interesting, or would have been treated with a little more openness. But why is it that subject is almost taboo? It's almost never, you know about it, but you never really talk about it. And when you ask questions, you're only given very top, you know, flimsy answers. Nobody really gives details.
I think if I can answer that, and that's part of it.
Okay.
I think it requires a bit more research.
Yes. Go ahead, Uncle GM, and then Mrs. Chitungo as well.
No, what I'm saying is that this is an area that needs to be explored, and also calls for research. You know, it's quite a lot of useful material in the library at Motomoto for researchers to go. And I think one of the problems I think as Zambians we have, we don't write very much. We will depend upon a foreigner to come and research on that and write on the Lumpa Church. I think it's high time that academicians amongst us took this up as a research to be able to delve into this. Yes, it's a very important aspect of our history. We may not like it, but it happened.
Mrs. Chitungo?
I think I'll stop there for now.
Yeah, I think I'll agree. Yeah, I'll agree with Monica, because the history, the Lenshina history, we need to find out ourselves what happened. It's not talked about much because it was in controversy with the government and also with the church. So that it was difficult to talk about. But myself, as working in the museum, some of the artifacts that were brought as things from which were confiscated from Lenshina's followers, which were branded as witchcraft objects, I recognize them as not as an African, as a Zambian. I recognize them different. But these were white people. Most of the people in the police that time were still white people, and they collected these things and they branded them, you know, in witchcraft and what. And people fear witchcraft. You know, there are these misunderstandings about Lenshina, and you know the big. Facilities to do further research on the subject, we will remain stagnant and remain with the history that we have. What we need now is the scholars coming up, teaming up with us, and then collaborating on a topic like this one, and coming up with information that can even be put in the museum, published, but you find that in most cases, especially Zambians and Zambian scholars, they don't utilize the museum. They don't ask such questions. We find still foreigners coming out and asking these questions, and they are the same ones writing and the same ones misrepresenting the information. So we need to have Africans, Zambians themselves, who need to get to ask these questions, especially if they are even like the person who asked, who are even related maybe to Lenshina herself. So they would understand more than anybody else.
That's true. That question, Alan, is very important. I don't know whether you know a lady called Margaret Botha. I'm sure Uncle GM, being from the UK, would probably. She's also from the Lenshina lineage, and she's written a book. She's written a book about it. I can call you after the show, and you and I can talk about it. It's also actually important for me to say this, to say, when we spoke to Margaret here on the show, Roger, you remember, she portrayed a certain angle of she actually she's related to Lenshina herself, and she wrote the book based on what her parents told her. So I think, just like Mrs. Chitungo and Mr. Mwansa are saying, it's important that this information, I mean, we have come to live in America, Rana Chitungo, others in Europe, Canada, my colleagues, Josiah, others in Australia, and this is the thing that has happened to us. Then we realize how valuable our culture and our languages and our heritage is. Because our friends value where they come from. They really want to know whether they are German descent, Italian. The African Americans want to know whether they came from East, South, and East. And all those things. Mrs. Chitungu, can you give us the location of Motomoto Museum in Imbala? What are the fees? What are the operation hours for people listening? And just encourage the people when they come to Zambia to get out of Lusaka and come to Northern Province.
Yeah, Motomoto Museum is located 3 kilometers from Mbala town. Yeah, you get to the police station, you turn on your left, and you get straight on to Motomoto Museum. It opens at from 9 hours to 16 hours every day, except on New Year and Christmas Day. So we are open throughout the year, and we also have a research library, and we have a research wing. If you want to conduct research, you are a university student, you are most welcome, and you can be in university anywhere in the world. You can come, and we can conduct research with you. And the Zambians, we encourage them to come as tourists, as well as scholars. And the fees for Zambians, actually, it's almost free because it's 2 kwacha for adults, 15 kwacha for children, because we say as a museum, we're keeping these things on your behalf, they are yours. For foreigners, it's still not expensive. It's $3 adults and $1 children.
Excellent. You also talked about the Facebook page. What's the name of the page so that we can encourage a lot of people in the diaspora to go there and get involved?
Motomoto Museum.
Motomoto Museum. Okay, there you have it, everybody.
Yes.
Let's go and find Motomoto Museum and like the page and encourage our American, Canadian, European, Australian, Japanese friends, those that are listening in the Eastern Asia world, and just direct our friends to go to that part. Uncle GM, you are a diasporan yourself. What should we do to make things happen or different for Motomoto?
Well, research is one. I would encourage scholars that can help us. We bring about most of the books that you will find even about the culture. You know, she talked about the Catholic fathers and so forth. They were all foreigners. If you look at indigenous Zambians in the priesthood in the Catholic Church, didn't do much. And I think this is an aspect as Zambians, we certainly do need to quickly catch them, because as we go on, posterity, we will not know much about where we came from and what actually happened to us. So I would encourage that those that scholars also just to find out about the richness of Zambia, instead of just going to the Victoria Falls or ending up in Lusaka, maybe tag a few days and travel up. I don't think people will be disappointed with what they actually find. There will be quite a lot of rich assets. And one of the other things we've been discussing with colleagues in Lusaka and on the Copper Belt in particular, exposure of urban youth to rural Zambia.
Mm.
Quite a number of urban youth, you know, little about rural Zambia. A number of youth in rural areas have visited relatives and so forth in urban areas, but the result is not there. Children growing up who know very little about their countryside. So these are some of the aspects that we would like to encourage. And also, as diasporans, to promote these aspects of Zambia, rather than just, as I said, Victoria Falls, Lusaka, etc. Because really, Lusaka, you may as well be in the part of London or New York, and so on, the way we are going. So I would encourage us, if we can, to visit the rich rural areas of Zambia.
Excellent. As we conclude our show, everybody, I just want you to know that Mrs. Chitungu and representing Motomoto Museum, like Chasaya said, and I mentioned at the beginning of the show, that is coming to us courtesy of Mr. Mwansa, who has just been speaking. A lot of people talk to us as we do Zander Block Talk Radio, they would like this to be, this guest to come. They're interested in that. That can be done. Just like Mr. Mwansa did, she introduced us to Mrs. Chitungu and sponsored the program. All those provisions are available. Those that are listening or have called in and listening online, you can contact us on Facebook or through our personal messages. And we appreciate Mr. Mwansa doing this. He's been, like I said, he's one of our senior contributors, and we consider him to be one of our advisors on this show. Mrs. Chitungu, we do thank you for taking the time to be with us and to talk to us about the museum. Everybody can confess that we've learned quite a lot here today.
The pleasure is mine, actually. I'm so thankful that you allowed us to talk, and also for the sponsor we got from Mr. Mwansa. Really, the pleasure is ours, and we invite everybody to come to Motomoto.
Yes, everybody, thank you again. Remember, Motomoto Museum is on Facebook. Let's encourage our friends to go there, ourselves, even our friends in the countries of our residents, and encourage them and say, hey, there isn't just Livingstone in Zambia. Go to Northern Province and you'll be able to experience a lot of things. Uncle GM, thank you as always. It was good to have you on.
Thank you very much.
Everybody, thanks for calling in. That has been our show today. I thank my colleagues, and starting at 9 a.m. Eastern, Roger Titus, the Zander Block Talk Radio team. Next week, we might go political. I know Zambians like politics. We might have GBM, as is popularly known. Some people would like to sponsor him to come on and explain his political future. We do everything here, and everything is welcome. Like our Facebook page, Zambia Block Talk Radio, and we thank those that are contributing towards our budget for this year. If you want to give any financial support, go to our website, zambiablocktalkradio.com, and there's a PayPal link there you can give to us. Everybody, have a good weekend, and we wish our President Lungu quick recovery. Thank you, Rana Chitungu, Uncle GM. Have a great Saturday.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Te wanga ineo, moyo wachinja mama neo. Mtawi zonte alikumowa, kudipe ntawi yona kubanja. Kumwana hako kuipirenji, kuchitoko na mumu follow. Ama ama inei, nizi wanda zota nizi. Taeza talema, nayo mapempelo. Ati kapena siku lina, azati kumbukila oye. Chifu kwa lelo, bantu bonse basoweza ulemu. Atate imwe, atate imwe. Kale osangalala tuwa ingatoki talema na pepo kapena mbale wanga azazi wakuti akula azazi otawa mavuto alimumanja mwake kapena azazi wakuti afuniko limba chifukwa ni mwamuna afuniko vuti kila banja kuti ni bambo wa nyumba Hello, asatae wana, siunga ziwe, aza kutunga kutogoro.